Mary had a little lamb,
The fall.
We believe that all men are created equal.
To the magnificent mosaic that is America.
From Radio Beacon to Radio Beacon.
I have a dream.
Change has come to America.
Believe it.
Help is on the way.
Knock, knock. Who's there?
Hey! It's a figment of your imagination.
Randy Rhoads Show. Turn up your mind.
Merrick Garland is speaking on behalf of the Department of Justice, addressing crimes that occurred on January 6th.
And threats of violence by white supremacists. The framers of the Civil War amendments recognized that access to the ballot is a fundamental aspect of citizenship and self-government. The Voting Rights Act of 1965 sought to make the promise of those amendments real. To do so, it gave the Justice Department valuable tools with which to protect the right to vote. In recent years, however, the protection of the Voting Rights Act have been drastically weakened. The Supreme Court's 2013 decision in the Shelby County case effectively eliminated the preclearance protections of Section 5, which had been the department's most effective tool for protecting voting rights over the past half century. Subsequent decisions have substantially narrowed the reach of Section 2 as well. Since those decisions, there has been a dramatic increase in legislative enactments that make it harder for millions of eligible voters to vote and to elect representatives of their own choosing. Those enactments range from practices and procedures that make voting more difficult, to redistricting maps drawn to disadvantage both minorities and citizens of opposing political parties, to abnormal post-election audits that put the integrity of the voting process at risk, to changes in voting administration meant to diminish the authority of locally elected or nonpartisan election administrators. Some have even suggested permitting state legislators to set aside the choice of the voters themselves. As I noted in an address to the Civil Rights Division last June, many of those enactments have been justified by unfounded claims of material vote fraud in the 2020 election. Those claims, which have corroded people's faith in the legitimacy of our elections, have been repeatedly refuted by the law enforcement and intelligence agencies of both the last administration and this one, as well as by every court, federal and state, that has considered them. The Department of Justice will continue to do all it can to protect voting rights with the enforcement powers we have. It is essential that Congress act to give the department the powers we need to ensure that every eligible voter can cast a vote that counts. But as with violence and threats of violence, the Justice Department, even the Congress, cannot alone defend the right to vote. The responsibility to preserve democracy and to maintain faith in the legitimacy of its essential processes lies with every elected official and with every American. All Americans are entitled to free, fair, and secure elections that ensure they can select the representatives of their choice. All Americans are entitled to live in a country in which their public servants can go about their jobs of serving the public free from violence and unlawful threats of violence. And all Americans are entitled to live in a country in which the transition from one elected administration to the next is accomplished peacefully. The Justice Department will never stop working to defend the democracy to which all Americans are entitled. As I recognized when I spoke with you all last March, service in the Department of Justice is more than a job and more than an honor. It is a calling. Each of us, you and I, came to work here because we are committed to the rule of law and to seeking equal justice under law. We came to work here because we are committed to ensuring the civil rights and civil liberties of our people. We came to work here because we are committed to protecting our country, as our oath says, from all enemies, foreign and domestic. Together, we will continue to show the American people, by word and by deed, that these are the principles that underlie our work. The challenges that we have faced and that we will continue to face are extraordinary. But I am moved and humbled by the extraordinary work you do every single day to meet them. I look forward to seeing more of you in person soon and to our continued work together. Thank you all.
All right. So Merrick Garland was to address the people of the United States today on behalf of the Department of Justice. And what we were looking for him to address was not just the enormous amount of prosecutions of people who were violent on January 6th, but we wanted to know that Merrick Garland understood that there was other crimes that occurred that led to January 6th, that this wasn't just like a herpes erupting on your face, okay? This is the underlying disease that was infested in our body politic a long time ago, and that it just erupted into an oozy pussy gravy sore on January 6th because we had been infected with Donald Trump's brand of autocracy. Oligarchy, demagoguery, whatever you want to call, what Donald Trump tried to do. We wanted to know not just that Merrick Garland saw the violence that we saw, and not just that the first prosecutions of the people who perpetrated the violence, who perpetrated the breach of our Capitol on January 6th were being tended to. We also wanted to know that the nonviolent portion of the coup was understood by our Department of Justice. And I think he gets it. I will say this. If anybody should be like super freaking angry, it would be Merrick Garland, because shouldn't he be Justice Merrick Garland right now writing majority opinions for the Supreme Court? Why, yes, he should. But the thing about Merrick Garland is he's sober as a judge. You see what I mean? And so that expression, sober as a judge, has now a person in which that particular cliche lives. And so you can see from his demeanor that while he is sickened by what he sees, sickened by the amount of threats that are being leveled at people all throughout our economy, I don't know how else to say it, and all throughout our government. And he understands that there is an underlying festering disease that's been injected into America by virtue of having a demagogue, a lying fraud as a president of the United States, that yes, he does see it, he does understand it. He will follow. He said this in the earlier portion of the speech before we connected. He said that he is following all the evidence, not just the physical evidence of the violence that occurred on January 6th, but that he is following people who were not present on January 6th through physical evidence and digital evidence. And he's following the money who financed this particular violent coup and the other coup, which we now know happened. You know, the government doesn't schedule Merrick Garland to come out and talk to us unless we've already been privy to the nonviolent coup that was also attempted on January 6th by the likes of Bannon and Navarro and Trump.